the 23rd of April, 1350. Why, you may ask, did I pick St. George? I understand. A Roman soldier from the 4th century who killed a dragon in Turkey does not seem like the obvious choice for the patron saint of England. Truth be told, I was simply trying to cover up a rather embarrassing incident that took place some months before on top of a hill in Uffington, Berkshire. We had been getting the most ridiculous reports from the locals, uneducated types, farmers, hunters, woodsmen and the like. A dragon. Each of them reported seeing a dragon flying around, causing mischief. Of course, at court, these musings were first laughed off as just the imaginings of peasants. The last dragon of England had famously been killed 500 years before. See Alfred the Great's entry, page 17. But the chance to slay a dragon proved too tempting for one of my knights. Roland, the Duke of York's second son, rode off to Berkshire. He left on the 3rd of January, 1350, and returned on the back of a wagon on the 15th. His body was taken to my Privy Council chamber under the cover of darkness so as not to cause a panic. I still remember the smell. Burnt flesh and hot metal. Roland was still in his armour. It had been impossible to pry his almost melted body from it. My advisers were awash with theories. Was this an elaborate hoax? Did we break the pact in any way? Were the Dutch to blame? Eventually, we decided to discreetly send emissaries to the continent in search of a dragon expert. Word suggested there was still rather a lot of work for someone of that ilk on the mainland. The first expert arrived on the 4th of February, a Frenchman by the name of Thomas Toulouse, who certainly looked the part. He was a dashing young man with a deadly-looking lance, chestnut stallion, and bags of confidence. We were so sure of this champion that a royal procession accompanied him to Uffingham. Toulouse went up the newly christened Dragon Hill, but never came down. The next few weeks proved just as fruitless. As king, I thought it proper to station myself close to the scene, asking that potential slayers report directly to me. We sent up a band of ferocious Norsemen, a handful of brave knights hailing from as far afield as Capapudauchan, and a wizard. The wizard was the only one to return, the tip of his long cap lit like a candle. He said slaying the beast was beyond his capabilities, but that he did have a recommendation, a monk who could be found in a small abbey called La Iglesia del Hombre que Busca on the west coast of Spain. The idea of potentially sending a man of holy orders to his death made me uneasy, but I was at my wit's end. There had been talk that maybe the king himself had to be the one to slay the beast. I was keen to put those rumours to bed. The dark-skinned monk arrived on the 1st of April. He was dressed in a simple brown robe, entirely without weapons. The only possession he brought with him was a small wooden chest. I asked him what he wanted as payment if he were successful. Others had asked for gold, lands, or titles. To my surprise, and without explanation, the monk only asked that he be allowed to cut down one English tree of his choosing. Naturally, I agreed. I then asked him what he would require to defeat the beast. He said he would need a white horse, a suit of polished armour, a long lance with a red ribbon, a bannerless shield, and the company of the king. He made these requests publicly, in full view of all the nobles and knights in the Berkshire encampment, all of their eyes, and the monk's two grey ones, fixed on me. How could I refuse? We were swiftly armoured, horsed, and making our way up the hill. The effect of the new garments on the monk was startling. His dark skin and ebony hair stood in stark contrast to his shining silver armour, giving him an otherworldly look. His posture was different. Gone was the pious bend of a monk. Now a knight sat steadfast on the white steed, lance up, shield over arm, with that intriguing wooden chest strapped to the back of his saddle. On our short journey, I asked the monk exactly how he planned to kill the dragon. He smiled and said that he didn't intend to kill it, but to make it go away. Well, before I could protest, he continued saying that it was imperative I do exactly as he said if I didn't want to be burnt to a cinder. We heard the dragon before we saw it. A huge intake of breath and then the noise of bellows blowing over a blacksmith's forge of hot coals. All the earth at the top of the hill was dry and cracked, as if a great bonfire had been raging there the night before. We reached the summit, and I finally saw the beasts that had been causing me so much unrest. Memory can be fickle, and did my mind play tricks on me? Exaggerating what was small, reducing that which was large? No. I feel confident that the beast was huge, unlike anything I had ever seen. It could have swallowed a heifer whole. The dragon's hide was scaly and green, its vast bat-like wings folded neatly. A long serpentine tail bore barbs the size of broadswords. The creature looked at us with two large orange orbs. The monk gestured to me to stay back. I did not need persuasion. The monk rode forwards towards the beast, as if to charge. But then, to my horror, he stopped. He removed his helmet. He spoke. "Good morrow. I have come over the sea to meet you. I've heard tales of your might and how you have roasted men from all over the world. As you can see, I have taken your power seriously. I stand before you in the finest armour that this island can craft. I ride the purest horse and hold the sharpest lance. The king of this land himself has come to watch my attempt. Are you ready for me?" The dragon raised itself up on its two back legs, each as thick as a tree, opened its wings and roared. The monk returned to me with a smile. He threw me his small wooden chest, telling me to keep it safe as he would be needing it shortly. "Keep faith," he said, putting his helm back on as he began his second charge towards the dragon, his aim true, the horse at a gallop. As I watched, I thought this strange monk with God at his back may truly be the hero we were looking for. But then the monk's lance dipped. He tried to recover to rebalance himself with his shield, but this caused his horse to panic. The rider lost his seat, the tip of his lance hitting the dry, burnt ground. The monk in knight's clothing was flung into the air. He crashed to the floor in a tangle of twisted limbs. The dragon, upon seeing this, opened its mighty jaws and laughed. To all my successors reading this, you must believe me that I know this sounds peculiar. Dragons do not laugh. Dragons do not know of jokes or merriment. But there was no mistaking it. It was not a roar nor a snarl. It was a laugh. To my astonishment, the monk laughed too. He got up, dusted himself off as their mirth continued. When they were done, the monk began to speak again. I could not catch what he said, for I was now further back and out of harm's way. Then I heard another voice, a low bass timbre. It was coming from the dragon. Eventually, the monk remounted his horse and rode back to me. "Your Highness, I have struck a wager with the dragon. All dragons are fiercely competitive. I will give it one attempt to burn me with its flame. You will act as referee. If the dragon is unsuccessful, it will leave England and never return to these shores. If it is successful, it will eat you. Well, I protested. The monk insisted that if this bet were not wagered, the dragon would eat us both. He then bade me open the wooden box he had brought from the abbey. Inside was a cloak of rich gold wool, as if woven from solid sunlight. It was a most wonderful garment. Accompanying the cloak was a small scroll, quill, and ink. The monk took the cloak and strapped it to his shoulders before unfurling the manuscript for me to read and sign. I have had a copy rendered overleaf. I, the rightful monarch of England, hereby decree that I shall perform the role of referee in a contest of strength on April 1, 1350. If my champion is successful, my adversary shall leave England's shores, never to return. If my champion loses their life, I shall allow the winning party to consume my flesh in any way they see fit. Reluctantly, I signed the scroll, conscious of the fact that it may be my last act as king. I comforted myself with the possibility that the scroll may survive me, proving my bravery to anyone who encountered it. The monk thanked me for my faith, returned to the dragon, scroll in hand. He bid I follow so I could do my duty fairly. As I edged closer, I could hear the dragon clearly. Its English was most impressive. It asked to see the document. Upon seeing my crown and signature, it seemed satisfied and asked the monk if he was ready. The monk nodded. He swirled the cloak over his shield, using the red ribbon from the lance to hold it in place, creating a crimson cross emblazoned over a field of gold. Smoke began billowing from the dragon's nostrils, the hungry look of the gambler filling its eyes. Fire came forth in a brutal jet of orange and blue, hitting the shield with a tremendous force, the heat so intense it was as if I stood next to an open kiln. I could only catch a glimpse. The monk crouched behind his shield. The gold of the cloak turned white hot, the red cross flashing brilliantly for a second before it turned to ash. When the beast finally tired, the ground all around the monk was blackened. The monk, however, was unharmed. He stood up with a smile, wrapping his undamaged cloak before throwing it towards me. I caught it. It was cool to the touch. Just as I never imagined a dragon could laugh, it was even stranger to see one look stunned. But the beast was true to its word. With a gracious bow and a mighty beat of its wings, the dragon took to the sky and flew off towards the sea. On our journey back down the hill, I had many questions, but only one was answered to my satisfaction. When I asked how I should explain the lack of a carcass, he responded thus. Tell them this was a holy apparition, no horrible monster, that the Lord had sent a vision of one of his chosen saints. Surely one of them has killed a dragon. Tell them that the men before us died because it is unsafe for an unanointed man to look directly upon the work of God. Understand? And that was it. That was the story we gave to the nobles waiting to hear of our success, that this dragon incident was simply a holy message from God. I relayed truthfully the only image of the conflict I'd seen. A man in armour, untouched by dragon flame, brandishing a white shield with a red cross. The monk gave back the armour, the horse, the lance, and the shield. He parted with a polite nod of his head before setting off on foot to find his chosen tree, singing as he went. I only caught a few words. Soon may the good day come, when God's cruel plan shall be undone. One day you'll be in my arms, but until that day I'll toil. I tried not to think on it too much. It certainly didn't sound like any hymn I was familiar with. And that, my successors, is why I chose St. George. Edward III.